Welcome back to the 23rd chapter in the Life Divine, the double soul in man. Let's pick up with the last sentence from the last section that we had. If the secret psychic person can come forward into the front and, replacing the desire soul, govern overtly and entirely, and not only partially and from behind the veil, this outer nature of mind, life, and body, then these can be cast into soul images of what is true, right, and beautiful. And in the end, the whole nature can be turned towards the real aim of life, the supreme victory, the ascent into spiritual existence. But it might seem, then, that by bringing this psychic entity, this true soul in us, into the front, and giving it there the lead and rule, we shall gain all the fulfillment of our natural being that we can seek for, and open also the gates of the kingdom of the Spirit. So wouldn't this be enough? Wouldn't this be sufficient? No. And it might well be reasoned that there is no need for any intervention of a superior truth consciousness or principle of supermind to help us to attain to the divine status or the divine perfection. Yet, although the psychic transformation is one necessary condition of the total transformation of our existence, it is not all that is needed for the largest spiritual change. Now, this entire section, like the one before it, has been rewritten and largely recast. So Sri Aurobindo has updated the Life Divine to meet how he viewed this integral effort in 1939, 40, etc. And we have met here for the first time the term psychic transformation. So what he's described before would be what happens when the inner soul in us comes forward and assumes sovereignty in the nature, displaces in a sense the ego sense, and puts its charge upon mind, life, and body. Wouldn't that be enough? Is it the true solvent to the spiritual question posed in the universe? So, he writes, again, let us read, yet, although the psychic transformation is one necessary condition of the total transformation of our existence, it is not all that is needed for the largest spiritual change. In the first place, since this is the individual soul and nature, it can open to the hidden diviner ranges of our being and receive and reflect their light and power and experience. But another, a spiritual transformation from above, is needed for us to possess ourself in its universality and transcendence. So when we disclose this inner soul within ourselves, this subliminal soul, the desire soul on the surface, the subliminal soul, our real psychic nature behind, can, as he says here, receive and reflect the higher divine ranges of being in itself. Receive and reflect. So that doesn't imply, if it's simply a reflecting power, that it has the native light. It is reflecting those values into the nature that it attempts to govern. But another, a spiritual transformation from above is needed for us to possess ourselves in its universality and transcendence. So finding our psyche is finding the key to our soul posited individually in us here. And while it links in commerce to the wider self posed as the universe, it is not that in direct expression. For that, it needs to lean upwards into the universal self, and beyond that, into the transcendent self. Transcendence, establishing itself as universal and individual, must be met for us to have the absolute answer to the cosmic riddle. So now we've had two terms meet us, psychic transformation and spiritual transformation. So he hasn't defined what the spiritual transformation is, but it is apparently the universality reflected in nature as the soul's individuality is reflected in nature. The vastness, the transcendence, must find its way into natural expression, just as the soul's psychic influence must find its way into natural expression. So there are two great terms that we've met so far of what we have to complete before we can have the ultimate resolution to the universal question, psychic and the spiritual transformation. By itself, he writes, the psychic being at a certain stage might be content to create a formation of truth, good, and beauty, and make that its station. At a farther stage, it might become passively subject to the world self, a mirror of the universal existence, consciousness, power, delight, but not their full participant or possessor. Although more nearly and thrillingly united to the cosmic consciousness in knowledge, emotion, and even appreciation through the senses, it might become purely recipient and passive, remote from mastery and action in the world. Or, one with the static self behind the cosmos, but separate inwardly from the world movement, losing its individuality in its source, it might return to that source and have neither the will nor the power any further for that which was its ultimate mission here, to lead the nature also towards its divine realization. For the psychic being came into nature from the self, the divine, and it can turn back from nature to the silent divine through the silence of the self and a supreme spiritual immobility. Again, an eternal portion of the divine, this part is by the law of the infinite inseparable from its divine whole. This part is indeed itself that whole, except in its frontal appearance, its frontal separative self-experience. It may awaken to that reality and plunge into it to the apparent extinction or at least the merging of the individual existence. A small nucleus here in the mass of our ignorant nature, so that it is described in the Upanishad as no bigger than a man's thumb, it can, by the spiritual influx, enlarge itself and embrace the whole world with the heart and mind in an intimate communion or oneness. Or it may become aware of its eternal companion and elect to live forever in his presence in an imperishable union and oneness as the eternal lover with the eternal beloved, which of all spiritual experiences is the most intense in beauty and rapture. All these are great and splendid achievements of our spiritual self-finding, but they are not necessarily the last end and entire consummation. More is possible. So he's here spoken about a number of deep, profound experiences. One is when the soul comes forward, moves into the nature, and establishes a formation in the front, in the mind, the life, and the body, making a facade of truth, good, and beauty. And the soul may rest there and say, this is far enough. This will be my station. And it's a good life. It's a beatific life. It may move on beyond that and move into communion with the world self and become passive to the movement of those cosmic forces as they want to articulate themselves through him or her. And in that case, the soul, in a sense, surrenders sovereignty. The world self, the cosmic soul, becomes master, and the personal soul becomes Anisha, not the Lord anymore, except by identity. And in this way, it could be recipient to the world forces and passive to them, but no longer master. And as Sri Aurobindo says, still farther, we could merge into the spiritual reality and lose our force in the world. That would be a third poise possible. But in all of these, if our ultimate mission is to lead nature to a divine realization, all of these stations are incomplete, even if they bring us into awareness of the cosmic consciousness, even if the soul has been disclosed and sits at the front of the nature. None of this is enough. Even if we were to merge into the silence of the self, arc upwards, become one with the Atman, again, we have left something incomplete in what we were charged to do in our first going hence from that. We could, of course, embrace the whole of the cosmos. We could fulfill ourselves in the communion with the Supreme Lover, with the Divine. And here Sri Aurobindo acknowledges the power behind the experience which is natural to the bhakta, where there is the full rapture of being enarmed with the Supreme, soul with greater soul. And all of these, in a sense, define what we have done so far in the evolution of spiritual consciousness in human life, in cosmic life. Sri Aurobindo continues, "For these are achievements of the spiritual mind in man. They are movements of that mind passing beyond itself, but on its own plane, into the splendors of the spirit." Mind, even at its highest stages, far beyond our present mentality, acts yet in its nature by division. It takes the aspects of the eternal and treats each aspect as if it were the whole truth of the eternal being and can find in each its own perfect fulfillment. So Sri Aurobindo recalls here the character of mind as a cosmic principle as it emerges out of the supramental. It is to give full force to the diversity. Each perspective stands as its own. Each looks for its own fulfillment. Continuing, even it erects them into opposites and creates a whole range of these opposites, the silence of the divine and the divine dynamis, the immobile Brahman, aloof from existence, without qualities, and the active Brahman, with qualities, Lord of existence, being and becoming, the divine person and an impersonal pure existence. It can then cut itself away from the one and plunge itself into the other as the sole abiding truth of existence. So once this opposition has been erected, even if erroneously, it is possible for the spirit from that poise to choose to vacate the world. I will become Brahman, immaculate and impersonal. I will withdraw from the world and its activities into the silence of the divine. So we might find one truth and lose another. To continue, it can regard the person as the sole reality, or the impersonal as alone true. It can regard the lover as only a means of expression of eternal love, or love as only the self-expression of the lover. It can see beings as only personal powers of an impersonal existence, or impersonal existence as only a state of the one being, the infinite person. Its spiritual achievement, its road of passage towards the supreme aim, will follow these dividing lines. So these are the exclusive preferences natural to the mind. They have a truth in them, but it is not an inclusive truth. It is an exclusive preference. So he continues, but beyond this movement of spiritual mind is the higher experience of the supermind truth consciousness. There, these opposites disappear, and these partialities are relinquished in the rich totality of a supreme and integral realization of eternal being. So Sri Aurobindo correctly points out that in the integral experience of the supramental, we get back to the core of being, back to Sat, the foundation of all. We obtain there a totalizing consciousness. The supramental does not divide to appreciate. It swallows whole all the experience of the infinite in a consciousness of sublime richness and wealth. It is this, Sri Aurobindo says, that is the aim we have conceived, the consummation of our existence here by an ascent to the supramental truth consciousness and its descent into our nature. So two things are implied. The psyche working through the illuminated nature, working through the spiritual transformation where it becomes one with the universe and arcs upward towards the transcendence, must complete that ascent and gain access to and make home to itself this supramental consciousness, and then descend with that totalizing consciousness back into nature. So now, he writes, the psychic transformation, after rising into the spiritual change, has then to be completed, integralized, exceeded, and uplifted by a supramental transformation which lifts it to the summit of the ascending endeavor. Psychic transformation, spiritual transformation, supramental transformation. So typically this would be the order of our advance. First, the disclosure of our hidden soul from behind. Then our communion with the universal and transcendent. And finally, to get back home to that supramental consciousness from which we came, and there find the totalizing power to complete the integral equation. Even as between the other divided and opposed terms of manifested being, so also a supramental consciousness energy could alone establish a perfect harmony between these two terms, apparently opposite only because of the ignorance of spirit status and world dynamism in our embodied existence. So this would be the nature of a supramental transformation. The fullness of the spiritual status, the absoluteness of the world dynamism, fused. This, again, is the first mention of supramental transformation in the terminology of the life divine. And here, speaking again of the supramental consciousness energy, he brings us back to the very nature of Sat-Chit Ananda, that it is consciousness energy. It is Chit Tapas, or Chit Shakti. So our awakened vision, our recognition of spiritual reality, is not by itself complete, because in Chit Shakti, vision has the power to fashion a harmony and make spirit plus world real to our daily experience. So it is the supramental that brings Satchidananda into the here and now of our life existence in the cosmos. Without that key turn in the evolutionary pitch of things, we cannot solve the cosmic question. In the ignorance, nature centers the order of her psychological movements not around the secret spiritual self, but around its substitute, the ego principle. So in a sense, we come back to the here and now. How are we dealing with the machinery of nature now? How do we point any achievement towards a sense of self? Well, we do it through this ego principle. A certain egocentrism is the basis on which we bind together our experiences and relations in the midst of the complex contacts, contradictions, dualities, incoherences of the world in which we live. This egocentrism is our rock of safety against the cosmic and the infinite, our defense. So the ego is our fallback position. It is through the ego that individuality posits itself in the enormity of the cosmos. We have to have it as a first face, a mask that we wear until we no longer need it. It is the way that we organize our experiences. It's the way that we routinize patterns of growth in a bewildering cosmos. As Sri Aurobindo will luminously say elsewhere, ego is the helper, ego is the bar. We need the ego to get started in the cosmos. At some point, we are mature enough that it becomes a bar to us, and then we must step beyond it and live from our true self. To continue, but in our spiritual change, we have to forego this defense. Ego has to vanish. The person finds itself dissolved into a vast impersonality, and in this impersonality, there is at first no key to an ordered dynamism of action. So, in a spiritual awakening, often, this opening person sense that we have has to surrender, has to give itself up in surrender or in vanquishment to the impersonal. The drop is absorbed back into the ocean, the finite into the infinite. But there are consequences to that. Without the ego, we're no longer in that case living in the ego with the sense that this is our reality. The ego, in a sense, has become so small, then can one still even perceive it? But what is our principle of ordination in the world? A very usual result, Sri Aurobindo says, is that one is divided into two parts of being, the spiritual within, the natural without. In one, there is the divine realization seated in a perfect inner freedom. But the natural part goes on with the old action of nature, continues by a mechanical movement of past energies, her already transmitted impulse. In other words, the karma inherent in the engine continues to go forward, even though one no longer identifies with the engine. The person in the cab may say, "No, I am Purusha. This is simply Prakriti moving forward. I only am this consciousness. I am not that nature. This is what I identify with, the sheer conscious stuff of existence, and not that moving machinery in front of me. He says, even if there is an entire dissolution of the limited person and the old egocentric order, the outer nature may become the field of an apparent incoherence, although all within is luminous with the self. So we have become absorbed inwardly, and we are conscious of this existence, and we feel the natural being to be outside ourself. This is the core of that Sankhya insight. And this becomes the character of the spiritual person to us. Inside, we live in the reality of the spirit, and what care we for what happens to the body? What care we for what this vehicle does in its behavior, its complex interaction with the world? And so, often, we are perplexed when we see a spiritual person whom we know to have the power of this realization active within them, behaving in a way that would seem to us non-spiritual, because we do not see with the same eyes that they have. We do not share their experience. We continue to judge by outer terms what we would expect them to achieve with that breakthrough into a supernal consciousness. But it is not so. Having achieved that awareness does not give one automatically the power to change the nature. And one can reside inwardly in that spirit stuff and attend not to the nature, letting it just go on its merry way. So he continues, thus we become outwardly inert and inactive, moved by circumstances or forces, but not self-mobile, jatavat, even though the consciousness is enlightened within, or as a child, though within, is a plenary self-knowledge, balavat, or as one inconsequent in thought and impulse, though within is an utter calm and serenity, unmattavat. Or, as the wild and disordered soul, though inwardly there is the purity and poise of the spirit, pishachavat. And in great beings, notably in Sri Ramakrishna, we have seen all these states cycling through, expressing themselves in the nature. none of the natural behaviors expressing perfectly the calm, the strong, the rhapsodic spirit within. Nature, incomplete in its cohesion with the spiritual achievement, behaves as it used to, behaves as it wills, behaves as dictated to by the impulses of the cosmos. Or, if there is an ordered dynamism in the outward nature, it may be a continuation of superficial ego action, witnessed but not accepted by the inner being, or a mental dynamism that cannot be perfectly expressive of the inner spiritual realization, for there is no equipollence between action of mind and status of spirit. Equipollence, by the way, just means equal in power. So what coordination there may be in the outer nature could be simply of the ordinary type, and the spirit resident within may not identify with it, claim any ownership of it, have nothing to do with it. Even at the best, where there is an intuitive guidance of light from within, the nature of its expression in dynamism of action must be marked with the imperfections of mind, life, and body, a king with incapable ministers, a knowledge expressed in the values of the ignorance. In other words, the spiritual power present in these realizations is insufficient to fully change into obedient ministers, into extensions of its own being, the active nature of mind, life, and body. It cannot be done. Only the descent of the supermind, with its perfect unity of truth knowledge and truth will, can establish in the outer, as in the inner existence, the harmony of the spirit. For it alone can turn the values of the ignorance entirely into the values of the knowledge. So no aspect of our natural life can fully reflect the sovereignty of the spirit until it has undergone this supramental change. So without the supramental, there is no fulfillment of the soul and nature, and the cosmic potential remains unrealized. We have to press on. We have more fully to evolve. We have to find the soul, live in the spiritual, transform our nature with both the presence of the soul and the power of the universal spirit to set the stage for the ascent into supermind, its consequent descent, and the ultimate transformation of our nature. So there's a great deal of work involved in answering this cosmic riddle. It is not the simple insight which does it. The insight itself is wonderful and liberating. It will unchain you from all the past. You no longer belong to the ignorance, but working this out in detail, fulfilling this concretely, is the work of life after life after life. And even so, we haven't a moment to lose, even though it stretches seemingly endlessly into the future. In the fulfillment of our psychic being, as in the consummation of our parts of mind and life, it is the relating of it to its divine source, to its correspondent truth in the supreme reality, that is the indispensable movement. And here too, as there, it is by the power of the supermind that it can be done with an integral completeness, an intimacy that becomes an authentic identity. For it is the supermind which links the higher and the lower hemispheres of the one existence. In supermind is the integrating light, the consummating force, the wide entry into the supreme ananda. The psychic being, uplifted by that light and force, can unite itself with the original delight of existence from which it came, overcoming the dualities of pain and pleasure, delivering from all fear and shrinking the mind, life, and body. It can recast the contacts of existence and the world into terms of the divine ananda. And so he ends the chapter. So we must relate the psychic being back to the principle of ananda from which it has descended into this apparent night of existence, just as mind has descended from supermind, life has descended as a link from chit shakti, and the body represents the very principle of sat, of sheer existence, as we shall see in the next chapter. So in all of this, it is contingent upon the soul to regain its source, to establish itself into supreme reality. And engaging with its supramental identity, can it bridge this chasm? The ascending soul, through the supermind, acts from the sheer unity of the experience of ananda to heal the divide, to close the gulf. It is the supramental that reunites the psyche to its originating ananda. And then the transformation moves forward. Interesting that he closes with a reference in this deliverance from all fear and shrinking, which is, again, one of the opening citations drawn from the Katha Upanishad, referring to the eater of honey who shrinks not. That is the nature of our soul. Here to taste the sap, the rasa, in all experiences, to find honey in all experiences. But ultimately, you can only do that when it has brought all things together, when it has become the fulcrum through which heaven and earth reunite. The supermind reunites with the soul to bring Satchit Ananda into the experience of mind, life, and matter. So next week, we continue in this discovery of the great chain of being when we get to the 24th chapter on matter. I thought we could read tonight from Savitri in the Book of Beginnings, Book 1, as he closes the third canto, the Yoga of the Soul's Release. Thus came his soul's release from ignorance, his mind and body's first spiritual change. A wide God knowledge poured down from above, a new world knowledge broadened from within. His daily thoughts looked up to the true and one. His commonest doings welled from an inner light. Awakened to the lines that nature hides, attuned to her movements that exceed our ken, he grew one with a covert universe. His grasp surprised her mightiest energy's springs. He spoke with the unknown guardians of the worlds. Forms he descried, our mortal eyes see not. His wide eyes bodied viewless entities. He saw the cosmic forces at their work and felt the occult impulse behind man's will. Time's secrets were to him an oft-read book. The records of the future and the past outlined their excerpts on the etheric page. One and harmonious by the Maker's skill, the human in him paced with the divine. His acts betrayed not the interior flame. This forged the greatness of his front to earth. A genius heightened in his body's cells that knew the meaning of his fate-hedged works, akin to the march of unaccomplished powers beyond life's arc in spirit's immensities. Apart he lived in his mind's solitude, a demigod shaping the lives of men. One soul's ambition lifted up the race. A power worked, but none knew whence it came. The universal strengths were linked with his, filling earth's smallness with their boundless breadths. He drew the energies that transmute an age. Immeasurable by the common look, he made great dreams a mold for coming things, and cast his deeds like bronze to front the years. His walk through time outstripped the human stride, lonely his days and splendid like the sun's. End of Canto 3. And this, obviously, a reference to Sri Aurobindo. In his month, August, as we move towards the 15th, his birthday. So, Jai Ma. Namaste.